So hi everybody, welcome along to Tuesday morning, Teaching on Karma. And those of you online, welcome. We begin as we usually do by doing a short meditation. We'll set our motivation, say the prayers, and then I'll actually begin the teaching on karma. So everybody just get comfortable in your seat. You want your back straight and your shoulders relaxed, and place your legs and hands in whatever way you feel most comfortable. And just let your shoulders relax. If you like, you can close your eyes. Let your body breathe itself. Feeling the body breathe itself. Just relax into awareness. And from within this state of awareness, imagine that the nature of the ground beneath your feet is of a starry sapphire light. This light ground is as soft and as light as a cloud. And all the space above you is filled with rainbows and offerings. Directly in the space in front of you, on a throne, sitting on a cushion of a lotus, a sun, and a moon, sits the Buddha Shakyamuni. He is surrounded by the assembly of Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, deities, and other enlightened beings. And you are surrounded by all sentient beings. These beings include your parents, friends, people who are difficult, and strangers. So we have a number of things in common with one another. And the first is that we all wish to be happy and we all wish to avoid suffering. We are also subject to impermanence and change, meaning that at some time, we will pass from this life. In fact, while we've been sitting here, I think more than 300 people have died, but we have not. So we are fortunate to still be alive when the causes of death are so many, and those causes that keep us alive are so few. So while we are still alive and have the leisure and opportunity to attain the spiritual goals that we seek, we are fortunate. Though we are fortunate, we still have to act quickly because things are not quite right and the world does not exist as it seems to. While this is the case, we do have a spiritual friend who's leading us in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. The Buddha, who taught the means to overcome suffering. His teachings, which are those means, and the Sangha, are those people who are following the instructions of the Buddha, putting an end to their own suffering and helping others do the same. So now we're here to learn about the Buddha's path and karma in particular. So you're basically offering up your time to understand the teachings of the Buddha. This is an offering of practice that you're engaged in. So to make this offering as purely as possible, I want you to imagine yourself to be as clear as a deity. And as a clear deity, you're holding a vajra and bell, and you're sitting within a sphere of great bliss. There you are, an entity of wisdom and compassion, empty and blissful. So it's from within this state, in the presence of the Buddhas and the enlightened beings, and you're leading all sentient beings in taking the safe direction of refuge. So please, now join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So in response to this prayer of ours, imagine that from the heart of each enlightened being above you, lights and nectar stream down, and these dissolve in yourself and all living beings who surround you. Negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan, your virtues and dharma realizations are increased. Having been cleansed by wisdom and love, you're now able to easily recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. You take immeasurable love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And you decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings into these four immeasurable states. And so you say, may all sentient beings have happiness in its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering in its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Again, from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down. And these dissolve into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. So negative behaviors and obstructions are purified. Your lifespan and health, your virtues and dharma realizations are increased. Feeling empowered and aware, breathe in, exhale, and relax into awareness. And from that relaxed state of awareness, invite the field for accumulated merit, which appear. And you say in front of them, reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, excellent and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since the beginning of time and rejoice in the merit of a holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cycle existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. So having purified body, speech, and mind somewhat and accumulated merit, and not wishing to cling to them as being inherently existent, we imagine that our body, speech, and mind, our enjoyments, our merits, everything we possess, are utterly transformed into the enjoyments of the environment of a completely awakened being. And I think that you want to offer this Pure Land to the Buddha and his entourage. And so you say, this ground, anointed
Anointed
with
with perfume,
perfume, stirring with
with
flowers,
flowers,
adorned
adorned
Mount
Mount
Meru,
Meru,
four continents of
continents of
sun and
sun
moon.
and moon.
I
I
imagine
imagine
this
this
as
as
a
a
Buddha
Buddha
field
field
in
in
Auckland.
Auckland.
May
May
all
all
living
living
beings
beings
enjoy
enjoy
this
this
pure
pure
land.
land.
You've released the offering. It's been accepted, withdrawn by the Buddha, who gazes at you. And you look up into his eyes. And looking at the eyes of the Buddha, you recollect your wish to abandon every cause of suffering, to help others do the same. And to know this all depends upon the correct view. And so you aspire to be a fully awakened being yourself. So, induced by wishes and prayers, there emerges from the Buddha a second figure which absorbs into you, whereby your form, your body, clearly becomes that of a Guru Buddha. So you're sitting as a fully enlightened being and radiating from the little hum inside at your heart, light rays strike all sentient beings surrounding you. You place each of them in the state of a Guru Buddha. You and everyone around you is seen to be a Buddha, a fully awakened being. And you have at the heart a moon disc. Upon that moon disc is a little white syllable A, that's marked by a yellow hum. It's encircled by the mantra which you begin to recite. Ayatamuni Mahamunaya The reverberations of the mantra fill all of space, permeate the body, your enlightened body, and the enlightened bodies of all beings surrounding you. In this way, the two purposes are achieved. You've achieved your own purpose to become fully awakened, and you've helped everyone else do the same. Although this is completely imaginary, virtue is being created. So through this virtue, may each of you quickly achieve the state of the Guru Buddha and place all sentient beings without exception into that state. Now breathing in through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth. But in your own time, let your eyes start to open, move your body in whichever way you want to. So these are our preliminaries. Again, so welcome along to the class on karma. So we've covered a bit of material already, and so I'll just briefly say what we looked at. We know that karma is an action. It's a volitional action. It's a mental action, and it's an action done with, it really means intention. So you intend to do something. That's the karma, and intentions always precede the actions. So when we are sitting here, we set our motivation, and then we carry out the action. So that's setting a motivation. That's karma. We created something, an intention to do good, to fully awaken, to benefit others. We've created virtuous karma. In our study, well, this is the actions that follow. Now we talked about last week about substantial causes turning into effects. We talked about two types of cause, a substantial cause and a contributory cause. Substantial causes turn into their effects, just like seeds turn into their plants. Contributory causes do not turn into the effect. They're like the soil, the sunshine, the water. They contribute to the effect, but they don't turn into it. What else do we look at? And a couple of causes support the effect. These are the most important things from last week. We also looked at the question of does karma work if you don't believe in it? We go, yeah, it's like gravity, right? If you fall out of a plane, you go down, whether you believe it or not. It comes just like that. So today we're going to look at karma in general, which means looking at the four, the four principles of karma. So how actions ripen. And then we're going to look at this phenomenon called karmic seeds. So this part, the karmic seeds part, might be a little difficult for you. It's probably a new concept, and it is. So I just want to introduce it to you so that you have some idea of what this word seeds, what does that mean? Because I know when I first heard it, I'll go, what are you talking about? Now, I've never heard about a mental seed in my life. I know about seeds that plants grow from, but nothing like that. Now, what does that all mean? And so I've always found it quite difficult to know or get a clear answer. And then when I'll be teachings that I'll be talked about, my ears would prick up, and then I'd go, like, I don't understand what you're talking about. So I hope I can at least introduce it to you, and I can certainly tell you where you can find out more about it in a way that's comprehensible to you. You'll understand it, I'm sure. It's just a new concept, takes a little time. So we'll look at these seeds. So in here, I think we asked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. About 7 or 8 questions we'll be answering into those classes. And to help me do this and explain it to you, I relied upon a number of different books, and these are the four here. So that brown book is called Steps on the Path to Enlightenment by Geshe Sopa. I don't know, 3 to 4, about 400 pages. It's all on just the topic karma. Karma is a real big topic and difficult to get your head around. But there are some very simple principles that we've got to look at today. The ones that I found most useful for this type of class are these Samsara Nirvana, Buddha Nature, and the Foundation of Buddhist Thought. They're both by His Holiness the Dalai Lama and a nun called Venerable Thupten Jinpa. They're written really well. And I'm sure we've all gone to school. This is not hard stuff. Course, Practicing the Path is by Yangtze Rinpoche. Is a long teaching given, and it also has very pithy. There's not much detail, but like, it gets to the point. Let's have a look at these four principles. So what are the four general principles of karma? So the first is the certainty of it. Karma is certain. Where people go wrong here is understanding what it's certain about. There's a number of simple mistakes you can make here with the karma is certain. I'm going to make sure you don't make it. Second principle is that karma magnifies. So it can increase in size, increase in effect, in other words. So I'll give you an example. So many years ago, I was living in a house and the tap was dripping. It's just one drop at a time, right? It's a tiny little drop of water, right? And I hear it and I go, yeah, like, I've tried to turn the tap off, it just keeps dripping, right? It's only a drip, so I just put up with it. You think that's just a drip, right? And then I got the bill, right? For each, it was over $60, right? It's like, yeah, I didn't see that coming. I just looked, just hearing a little drip, just this tiny drip, drip, drip of water, right? Well, all those drips added up. Cost me $60. Karma's like that. You do a little thing, you think nothing of it, and but the bill can be quite large. Thirdly, it's not experiencing the effects of actions you did not do. So, for instance, you cannot win the lottery if you have not bought a lotto ticket. If you don't have the ticket, you cannot get the prize, right? It's the same here. If you don't do a particular action, you cannot get the effect, whether it's positive or negative. If you wish for something good to happen in your life, you have to do something about it. Not wishing for it is not enough. And same thing if something terrible is happening to you. Just wishing for it to stop Well, that's very, it will in time, of course, but you can do something about it way before that. So, act on it. It's become as an act. And lastly, the actions you've done do not perish. We look at the example of the drips of water. Like, just because it's dripping, it's like, it's not that nothing happens, does it? It's like, no, I'd get the $60 bill. So there is an effect. If you don't do something about it, if I call in the plumber, you could have turned it off, right? And it wouldn't cost me $60. So there is things you can do, but if you don't do it, then the effect's going to follow. So we'll look at these in a bit more detail, but that's in a nutshell sort of thing. We'll look at a quote from the Buddha, and this is from a sutra called The Questions of the Bodhisattva Suratta. And in this quote, he says, "As in planting, happiness and misery are effects from the deeds performed. How can a bitter seed yield you a sweet fruit?" So, seeing this universal truth, the wise should think: evil doing brings painful effects, while good deeds always lead to peace and happiness. Now, is there anything in this quote that you're unsure of, or that strikes you funny, or like I said, doesn't make sense to you? So, as you can see here, they're just using the example of planting stuff, aren't they? And he's just sort of saying, when you plant a seed, an effect arises. He says, well, it's the same as if you want the effect of happiness or the effect of suffering, it depends upon a cause. You have to do something, then it's going to happen. So here they're saying, oh, we want a crop, so we have to plant some seeds. You go, yep, okay. Well, what sort of crop do you want? So you decide, okay, so I would like, I don't know, maybe a crop of lovely flowers. So I'm going to plant some chili seeds here and expect some lovely flowers. It's not going to happen, is it? The causes have to run into the effect. They have to be related. Otherwise, anything could cause anything, and that's not the case in life. So we only need to find the right causes to produce the effect we wish for. Or if you don't wish to experience something, don't plant that seed.
Eddie, I think it's really interesting because in the news right now, without going to specifics, you can see lots of adults planting lots, doing lots of actions and expecting effects, but they haven't actually thought about will my action bring the effect that I want? And it's just they're doing a little grand experiment, and you're just like, I can already see this is not going to work. Like, and some most of us can, but yeah, it's just this it comes down to if we haven't really thought about it. Have our actions going to cause the right effect?
Yeah, so just to follow on from that, Kenny. So, what's the news? There's wars going on all over the place. Terrible things are happening to people, right? And so, what do the peacemakers say about this, right? It's like, yeah, so we want to have peace, but to do that, we're going to have to bomb the crap out of you. We're going to have to kill you and your families. That's how we're going to get peace. And you look at it, it's just like George's gun. Yeah, no, I'm afraid that hasn't worked since the beginning of time. But that has never brought peace. So here we have an effect wanted, peace. What's the cause? A war. Let's kill them. That'll bring some peace. These two are out of harmony. So we know this is not going to work. If you want to have a peaceful effect, you have to use peaceful means. Yeah, so this is just a good example. We see this all around the place. And what you need to do is check yourselves too. We all want to be happy. None of us wish to experience suffering. So the experience of happiness and suffering is experienced by us. Our mind knows what these are. So therefore, what am I doing to achieve that? This is what we have to ask ourselves. That's an effect. To be happy. What am I doing to produce that happiness? Am I working for myself or against myself? You might find many times what you wish for, you're actually working against it. And so karma tries to straighten that out so you can sort of go, oh, now I get it, now I get it. Yes, we'll come to that, Ruby. So we have, like I said, as we go through this, I'll bring out all the different points of this, what they call the seed. Right? Because the seed, this intention, is the big thing about karma. Now, like, we intend to be happy. Yes, okay, what are you going to, how, what's your method? You have to want to be happy first, right? And depends upon that wish, now you have actions, other actions. Yeah, the teachings of karma, of course, would affect our fundamental truth. This is the Buddha's message. If you, like I said before, if you take refuge in the Buddha, this is what you're taking refuge in. You're saying, okay, what have you got to say? So the Buddha talks about karma, cause and effect. He talks about suffering and what causes it. Then he talks about how you can put an end to it, and how's that brought about? That's it in a nutshell. Yeah, so if you've taken refuge and you believe in Buddha, but you don't follow the teachings on karma, cause and effect, I don't know what sort of guest would say, that's a Buddhist by belief, but they're not practicing it. They're not following the Dharma. The teachings are not just to be heard, it's to be acted upon.
Megan on Zoom asks, what happens if you do something negative with a good intention? I read a story about a great bodhisattva who killed someone as it was the only way to save 499 others from being killed. And the bodhisattva took the responsibility of that karma upon themselves.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you look at, so Megan, the intention behind the, you should look at the intention that the Buddha, that the Bodhisattva had when he took the life of the ship captain. So you see in that story that he realized there's no way other than to kill this person. You know, like there's no other option here. If there are other options, we get a different story. This is one where he says there's no other option but to take the life of the ship captain. So that's a negative action. But you ask, why are you doing it? Why are you deliberately engaging in a negative action when you know it's negative? So his answer to it is, okay, this man is about to kill everybody on the ship to take all their riches, right? There's 500 people on the ship. This one man is going to take all their lives to take all their wealth. So if I allow this to happen, this man will have on his mental stream the karma of killing 500 people, then stealing all their wealth, and also killing me. That's horrific negative karma to have on you. So to save the would-be killer from experiencing that type of karma, and also to save all these other people's lives being taken, he goes, okay, I will take the karma on of killing this one person. I will take his life to save the lives of these 500 people, and not only that, but to prevent this fellow from spending all these times in the hellish realms. So I will take his life and take that karma. So he does. The thing is, he's also skillful enough to know that karma doesn't intrinsically exist, and he's got all the methods to make sure that he doesn't experience the same karma that that fellow would have done. If this fellow killed all those people, the results would be very, very different than what the bodhisattva would experience. That's for sure. And so one of the stories they say was sort of like that. So when the Buddha cut his toe, I think there's a story that goes, what was the cause of that? And he says, well, in one other previous lifetime, I'd done this really heavy thing, and this is the result. I got a little cut on my toe. Not suddenly 100 years in the lower realms or all those sort of things. So this is why I'm saying the intention is the most important thing. Not the act is important, yes, but it's always looking at why are you acting this way. And in fact, I'll put a slide, the advice at the very end in terms of if you wanted to practically apply it, you'd ask yourself, what fruit will this seed grow into? Right? So you're sort of saying, well, what consequences are going to follow when I act? Then, Father, you had your hand raised?
Yeah, sorry. I was just curious as to, like, how karma on either side would potentially compound with interference of someone else's karma. like if that was already his karma to, for example, to kill all those people, and that's just, you know, the way, let's say no one interfered.
Yeah.
So that was going to be his karma, but now this person interfered.
Yeah.
So how does that affect the sort of dynamic of it?
Well, by having the bodhisattva interfere, this man who was going to kill all these people just dies.
Yep.
He does not accumulate the karma of killing 500 people and the horrific suffering that would follow. So that's a terrific outcome for him. He just loses his life. But in this life, we're all going to lose our lives.
So
to speak. No, he can't accumulate the karma. He did that. He had the intention, but there's no follow through.
Yeah.
So this is what we're going to come up to look at with the seeds and things like that. But it's not just the intention is the actual karma, but there's many other aspects to it. Okay, I'm going to move on. So here are these four in a little bit more detail. So when we say karma is definite, this is what it means by the definite. Right? Unskillful actions produce suffering. Skillful actions produce happiness. That is definite. That's the part you need to remember. That's the definiteness. It does not mean when you create an activity, an action, an unskillful action, you will suffer. That's not the definiteness of it at all. Because in fact, you can prevent all that. Otherwise, what would be the point of teaching karma? You know, when we put a seed in the ground, right, and it starts growing up, and we go, oh my God, that's not the plant I wanted. What do we do?
Don't put in the conditions.
Yeah, we pull it out usually, aren't we? We go, I don't want that plant. Oh, great, I'll pull it out. So we don't get the full plant. It's the same with karma. Just because you do something unskillful or bad, it's not definite that you will experience the result. It's definite you will if you don't do something about it. Yeah, that's what's definite. But this is not what the meaning of definite is here. That what's definite is good produces good, bad produces bad. That's definite. It's never good produces bad or bad produces good. Not like that. This is important because I've had people in here, and I know they've been Buddhist practice for years and years, and they had a wrong concept about this. And this is a really straightforward, simple thing. They'll ask me, I'm going, oh my God, they got this wrong. And they've held it wrong for years, and now they've got a question about it. So again, the definiteness here is good produces good, bad produces bad. It is never good produces bad, bad produces good. So that's the major thing to hold in this here. So karma is definite. So what's definite here is, you see this little seed? It turns into the seedling, it turns into the plant. Right? It just goes along like that. If it's not interrupted, it'll just keep going like that. So happiness comes from previously created constructive actions. It's just, you know, this is how that's definite. They're tied in like that. Suffering comes from previously created destructive actions. So the bodhisattva knew, if I let this go, if I let this fellow kill these people on the boat, it's for certain this guy's going to suffer greatly, taking 500 lives, then taking all their wealth, all the rest of the stuff that follows. That's a natural projection, right? So he goes, no, I'm going to interfere. I'm going to stop it. And he does. So now he accumulates the karma of killing one person. But because his intention is the main thing, that's the karma there, right? The intention to prevent greater harm to this fellow and the other people. This is intention. That's a good intention. That can only lead to goodness. Then, of course, when he takes the life of the other fellow, there's another intention that goes along with that. But the primary one is, I intend to stop this man doing this, and then the action follows. But the karma is the intention. Why am I doing this? The reason. Secondly, karma increases. So from the seed of one acorn, grow one tree, they've got all these other seeds, and next thing you've got a whole forest. It's just like that with the mind too. You might do one little thing, and next thing that little thing leads to a whole lot of other things. They talk about the small lie, and then to cover that lie, you tell another lie, and then another, and next thing it's like completely out of proportion, right? It just It grows. So a small action can produce a very large effect. A drop of water, you think it's nothing, it's $60. You know what we call a white lie, small lies that don't seem to hurt anybody. Stuff happens to us when we create them. No action, no effect. So you can see there's no forest on that land. It's completely bare, right? You go, well, how come? I said, well, I haven't put any seeds down there, I haven't watered it, and that's why we don't have a forest there. So some of you might have seen in China, there's this massive deserts out there, right? And they're out there planting it all with seeds and soil and watering it, all sorts of things. But if they just stayed there and wished for it and prayed, it's not going to happen. So they have to have the intention, and then the action follows. So, like I said, you cannot experience the effect of an action without first having created its cause. So, in other words, you need to intend to accomplish an effect. That's the karma. I want, there's your thing there. Then you have other actions that follow to create that, to bring about that effect. And again, these actions do not go to waste. So once an action is performed, the potential for its outcome remains. But, so like, for instance, when that tap is dripping water, right? So I don't think anything of it, and it just keeps dripping and dripping. But there's a potential there, isn't there, that it's going to cost me something. And of course, over time, I realize that. Right? But I could have gone for $90, because if I didn't get the bill in time, I would have just... The effect of an action will be experienced unless it's counteracted. So in our way of living, we have to work out like, okay, we've created all sorts of actions. Some of them are definitely going to produce suffering for us. So we should look and go, okay, what might they be? I have to stop that. I don't want that to happen to me. If I've stolen in the past, and I know I have, and I've taken things without permission, the result of that will be poverty for me. The long-term effect is poverty. Is that what I want? And if I say definitely not, I've seen people in poverty, I don't want to live like that. Then you have to do something now so you can stop it. But that's why we need to learn this stuff. We have the causes of our suffering. They're not happiness on our mainstream. We want to create more causes for happiness and make sure they're not hindered. Come on in. Please grab a seat anywhere.
And actually, Eddie, Megan had a question that kind of is similar to what you were just talking about. She asked, is it possible to purify other people's karma if it affects us? So she recently had her dry stolen, and she prayed that the people who stole it would get some benefit from it. Does that work? Is that a thing?
It's very good for you, Megan, to have this and make this prayer. That's for certain. But no, because otherwise, think of it. Think about it, like the Buddha has made all these aspirations and prayers for us. Right? And are we free of suffering?
No, because we haven't done the work.
No, that's right, we haven't done the work. No, so it's great if you do that, Megan. It might have an effect, but most times, if it did, it wouldn't be discernible to you. You know, many of us have great wishes and hopes for our families, for instance, the people we care for. Then we look at what they do, and sometimes it doesn't work out like what we wish for. So we each have to purify our own karma. In fact, Megan, later on, the Buddha says, I can't wash away your suffering like I wash my hands, and I can't wish it away either. So we've created it, we have to clean it up, which is great, right? Imagine if you had to rely on somebody else that decided to sleep in, right? Because they could. We don't have to. We just know, okay, this is what's causing me a problem. I need to do something about it. Or this is really, wow, I'm so happy. What caused that? If find out what it is. Go, well, okay, I like that. I'll do more of that. Okay, so this leads us over to our, the four principles of this idea. So this is an analogy to sort of show how these four things work together. It's called the analogy of the cherry tree, I think it is, or the medicinal tree. So karma is definite. If you plant cherry seeds, you can only get a cherry tree. You can never get a cherry tree. So that's how they're in harmony. That's what's definite. Remember, good produces good, bad produces bad. Chilies produce chilies, cherries produce cherries. That's definite. Now we know what happens when these seeds go down, right? They start growing up. Next thing you've got this huge tree, and next thing it's got all this fruit on it, and you've got shade and branches. It's big. And the fruits drop off, and then they produce more, right? So it's like this one little thing. Boom, expands. So that's in the physical world. They say that even it's even greater in the mental domain. So the good, wow, it's great. The bad, not so great, right? It's a real big too. So you want to be, this is what I'm saying, be really careful about how you act. And as you know, the teachings, the Buddha helps us, is just look, the first thing you need to do is just stop doing things. It's nice, it makes it easy, you know? Just don't do those things that you do, normally do, that cause yourself suffering. Just don't do it. So karma is expandable, and you never get a result without a cause. So wanting cherries is not enough. Wanting to be free from suffering, wanting to be happy, great, that's your starting point, but it's not enough. So you have to act on it, mentally act on it. And then your body and speech will follow if it's required. Sometimes you're just going to act on it mentally and you just keep going mentally. You don't need to do anything with your body or speech. And many of you know that this is a great example of Milarepa spending all those years in the cave, right, and going green out of eating the thistles outside because that's all he had to do. He completely changed his mind. And it was just him and that's in that rocky cave. Right? Lastly, they are inevitable. So if you create a karma, it will come to fruition unless you do something about it. If you do something about it, it can't. But if you leave it alone and it meets all the right conditions, your cherry seed will go into a cherry tree, or your hatred will increase so much that you might end up killing someone. That's how it works. All your fears turn into anger, and then the anger goes into resentment, then it builds and builds, right? Because you keep thinking about the thing. And next thing you're doing something about it. Next thing you're hurting somebody. But it all comes out of the mental side. It's really important to sort of know where the stuff is being created, right? It's us, it's our mind. So, like I said, when phenomena happen beyond our senses, not back here, like when you see phenomena, or like you eat the lovely apple pie with the cream that I love, right? I go, oh, yummy. Looks like the cake is so nice. That's not the cause of my happiness. Right? It's a mental thing. It's the same for when people say harsh words to us. They're not the cause of our suffering. Right? Causes back here. It's a mental thing. The people are just contributing. They're not the main cause. Right, so we've got to go, okay, well, they contribute to my happiness and my suffering. Yeah, that's true. But where's the root? Where is it all happening? Well, back here. So I think. Okay, so if you find anything interesting you'd like to mention, anybody online or in the class, are these four principles sort of easy enough to sort of get your head around? Sometimes it takes, I know for me, it took me quite a while to sort of acknowledge this. Because I had to experience it like practically and then go through each step and then go, Oh my God, I've told the story again, but it had such an impact on me that I want to share it with you because it's quite simple and straightforward, right? So when we're at the old center, I'm in my little room reading my Dharma books. Miffy comes in and says, "You need to take the rubbish out." Right? And I go straight away into like anger. "Why do I have to take the rubbish out? You just saw it. You can see me reading and studying, can't you? Why? You just take it out." This is what's going on in my mind, right? I'm going like, the book, what's wrong with you? This is what's happening with me. And then I'm going like, then it goes, she can't be the cause of my suffering. She's not causing all this to take place. Because if she were, she'd turn into my suffering. She hasn't. She can't be the number one cause. It's got to be something I'm doing. What is it? What is it? So I start going like, this is interesting now, right? So put my book down and start thinking, why am I so upset just to go and put the rubbish out? I've just been asked, that's all. Then it arises in my mind, I don't like to be told what to do. It's really that simple. Right? I don't like it. And I was going, gee, there's a lot of things I've behaved like this so many times in my life with my family and parents. Lots of things I just get cranky because I'm asked to do something I don't like. I don't want to do it. Anyway, I was sort of going, holy heck, well, that's right. So now I've found like an answer. I don't know yet if it's the answer, right? It's just an answer I've sort of come up with. I'm just sitting there trying to think it through. And I go, so what do I do about it? My answer to myself, buddy, was like, you better like everything she tells you to do. But just that way I won't get angry. Why? I won't get frustrated. I like it. I like to be told what to do. Right? So I'm sitting there going, yeah, I like it. I want to put the rubbish out, right? I think this, I feel better immediately. Take the rubbish out and go, oh my God, just like that, just a change of motivation. No, I like to take rubbish out. I'm going to take it out now. So I go and put it out. And I'm watching my mind coming back, feeling happy. And then I sit down there and I go, wow. Okay, yeah, that's true. She's not like the substantial cause. And it had a big effect on me. And so from then on, I knew, right, no matter what people are doing, it's like they're not the cause of my suffering. They might contribute because I heard something I didn't want to hear while I was reading my book, but I can't point my finger and say, you blah blah blah. Later on, I read Shantideva's Bodhisattva's Way of Life, and it talks about the fuel for anger. What is the fuel for anger? And he answers, getting something you don't want to do. I was right, I got it. So you find this yourselves, there's many things that you won't want to do that you say, I don't like doing So when it arises, what's what happens to you? You get sort of agitated. Right there's the cause of your suffering.
And just tapping onto that, like one thing I found personally from understanding karma is, like you said, it's a relief in a way, because before you're just a victim and stuff
Yeah,
just
that's
happens
right.
to you, right? You've got no
Yes.
control, it's 100% out there, and
I'm a
you're either
victim.
a victim of really good stuff or a victim of really bad stuff. But when you realize actually there's a big role that I play, then you can change your karma and how you see the situation, how you respond to it. It really does change how you
Yeah, it
play.
changes how you feel, how you act. Just the big change comes. And it's a much more a forgiveness. It's like you can't blame other people now. You can't blame the sun for shining or the rain for falling on your hair. That's not the fault for suffering, right? In fact, you might be standing in somebody saying, please rain, and you're sitting there grumpy. Right? Can't be the rain then, can it? Must be something the mind is doing. And it's either pleased or displeased. I like it or I don't like it. There's the root right there. I like, I want. I don't like, I don't want. One produces greater happiness, other produces suffering.
And a question from Megan.
Yeah.
Does karma expand in a predictable way, Or are there too many variables and other factors that come into play?
Yeah, Megan, in an unpredictable way, too many factors. In fact, as I often said, the only enlightened being can understand all the causes and conditions that come together to produce an effect. And oftentimes, you think about this, think about any effect, are the causes and conditions are multiple, you know, as soon as you start thinking about it. So this is our first meditation. Please get this comfortable in your seat. Drop your shoulders, straighten your back a little. And if you like, you can close your eyes gently. Then settle into your meditation posture and allow your body to become still and firm like a mountain. Now let your breath flow naturally as your mind begins to quiet. This way you create some space for wisdom to emerge. And the wisdom we wish to emerge is to understand how our actions shape our experiences. So I want you to imagine your consciousness, awareness itself, as a large garden, an open garden, where intentions become seeds. And these seeds are waiting to grow into the fruits of your future. So the Buddha taught that all experiences arise from causes that we ourselves have planted. So we've planted them in this great field of awareness. So when we understand karma, we gain the power to create happiness and to eliminate suffering. It's like growing the plants we wish to and weeding anything that hinders them. And the four principles of karma are like a medicinal tree. Its seed always produces healing. Cause is related to effect. Seed always produces healing, it never produces poison. So the medicinal tree, its growth multiplies from being a tiny seed to a vast canopy. It only yields medicine when planted. And the potential of the seed and the tree remains until conditions allow it to flourish. So we have this analogy with a medicinal tree. Now we try to apply it to ourselves. So how might you apply the certainty of karma in your daily choices? So remember the certainty of karma. So what intentions can you bring to your life, the daily choices? So we plant seeds again and again. So we need to consider which seeds we're planting from moment to moment. So what small positive action could you magnify or increase through repeated practice? So recollect that even a single kind word can grow into a profound connection. Have you ever witnessed the dormant seeds of past actions suddenly bearing fruit in this very life? So this is like when something shocking happens to you, something quite unexpected. Right? You don't really know the cause, but these things happen to us. This forces us to recognize that an action's potential never disappears. So I'd like you to resolve or to decide to plant intentional seeds of compassion, wisdom and virtue whenever you can. And then may your understanding of karma guide you towards awakening for the benefit of all beings. Now breathing in through your nostrils, exhale, let your eyes flutter open. And now we come to this little difficult part. And here we're going to look at the effects of karma and talking about these seeds. So karma, like I said, increases over time. So its momentum becomes stronger. Like, you know, like I said, you've got this little seed. It's got the momentum to produce this huge tree. So I don't know that you've seen in India, there's this massive tree there. It is absolutely huge. I don't know, 150 carriages can park underneath it. But it comes from one tiny seed. Yeah? It's absolutely huge. And you give all the shade it provides, all the leaves, yeah, like it's a big deal. But it comes from this one small thing. Yeah? So this is talking about the increasing effect of it. So for us, it's like, okay, this tells us, you know, we want the effect of happiness. Okay, what are we doing about that? Are we just wanting it, or what do we have to do? You know, find out what it is, because even like even a small act can increase. Yes. I remember one time I took this guy to a film. I just met him, he was a friend of another person. I took him to a film called Being There. I don't know if any of you have seen this, by Peter Sellers. A really great Dharma film. And he'd never seen a film like this. And, you know, with the film finished, and then he said something and I said something back to him. And I saw him about 15 years later, and he said, that film, you took me to this film and you said this to me. And really mushroomed into some sort of big thinking thing for him, you know? It was just a few words, but it was this little thing. And you might find this yourself, so I've come across people. Maybe it's a kind word, but you never forget it, right? And you really appreciate it. It could be something like that, or like some wise thing you say. Now, this goes for the big things and the small things, isn't it? Sometimes you might be tired, right? And somebody asks something of you, but because you're tired, you're a little cranky, right? So you sort of look at them and give them like a leave me alone sort of look, right? They don't forget it. It's like that was their first impression of you. Now they think badly of you, right? What did you do? I just sort of like, hey, I was busy. You didn't think. Like this could go on. And that person remembers year after year, and then they dislike you more and more. It's like, geez, what did I do? Yeah. Anyway, it's sort of like that, right? So just saying, but please choose your actions. You know, wisely, they have massive repercussions. Now, these seeds, we can ask ourselves like a lot of questions about them. So this talk about seeds now brings another word into our discussion. It's called latency. So I'll just read you a little bit that I wrote down here. So Chandrakirti is a great Buddhist philosopher and meditator, says that which pollutes the mind stream and also leaves imprints and causes the continuation of something is called a latency. So I say again, it pollutes the mind stream, it leaves imprints and causes the continuation of something. This is called a latency. Other English synonyms for latency are predisposition, habitual tendency, imprint and propensity. So these words come up in the text, they talk about the imprint of this and this propensity to do things. Now, these phenomena, these latencies, they are impermanent, meaning they are subject to change. Now, when the Buddhists talk about like all phenomena, they've got different ways of categorizing it all. So one is like, okay, these things are all physical. They call that form. Like the floor is form, this body we've got is form. Anything you can see in the room is form. That's one sort of category. The other one is called mentality or awareness or mind. Right? So these things are impermanent too. They're something to change, but they have no physical characteristics. They have no atomic nature. So they're quite different. So you categorize all the mental stuff in this one, all the physical stuff in that one. Then they have another category, which is neither of those two. So everything else fits into the other category. And they're impermanent, they're subject to change. Like what? Time, karma, seed, latency, person. A person is not physical and they're not mental. But they're a combination of both. And it's called a person. So that goes into the third category. And that's one way of looking at all of those categories, right? Looking at all phenomena. So seeds, latencies, karma, time, birth, death, time, area, all these phenomena, heaps and heaps of them, they all just go into that third category. And this category is called an abstract composites. So a composite is things made pushed together. There's all these phenomena have parts, right? But they're abstract. They're like ideas of time. The person, these are concepts. You know? Specifically mental and not form. So they go in there. Numbers are another one. Right? Let's go in there. There's heaps and heaps of them that go into the abstract composite. These latencies go in there. That's how they're categorized. So they're not meant, they're not mind, they're not mental, they're not physical. Now, these seeds and latencies are, like I said, abstract composites. Now, these latencies, you can speak about them in two ways. One is in the form of seed. So a latency is a seed. But you can also have these other things, a potency. In karma, this potency and seed are one and the same thing. In afflictions, they're quite different and they serve different purposes. But in our discussion about karma, they're one and the same thing. The seed and the latency is the same thing here. So a seed is necessarily a latency, but a latency is not necessarily a seed. So I'll say something about this. So the seed has the connotation of being a cause of something. Is that okay with you? Like the seed is the cause of the seedling and so forth, right? Like we've been talking about, right? Because this thing is going to change and turn into the thing, the substantial cause, the seed. The latency implies the energy or potential for something. So although the mind that gives rise to seeds and latencies may be virtuous or non-virtuous, the seeds and latencies themselves are neutral. That's a little bit more difficult, but this. So in other words, we've got this phenomenon in our minds called a seed. This seed is an intention, karma, an intention. So every intentional action of body, speech, or mind plants a seed. The strength of the seed depends upon the force of your intention, whether you complete the action or not, how often you repeat the action, and whether you rejoice or regret afterwards. So, for instance, we can do something stupid. We might not intend to do the stupid thing. So intention is weak, it's not there. But we have done the silly thing. So our intention to actually do a silly thing or hurt someone wasn't there. So intention is out. that's weakened the whole karma immediately. Like, for instance, you walk out there and you stand on a little ant you did not see. You kill that ant, right? That's an action. Did you intend to do that? No. So that's the major part of the karma out of the picture. It cannot produce a rebirth for you. Did you actually complete the action when you go, or yeah, the action was completed. I mean, the animal, the insect died, so that's come to completion. So that's done. How often did you do it? Just once. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't go back and walk over it again. So once. Whether you rejoice or regret afterwards. So are you going to rejoice in the fact that you stood on the ant and took its life? Probably not. If you're going to go, oh my God, you're like, sorry, I didn't see you. No, so it's regret. So of all the parts of the action, there's only one there to give you a bad outcome. So it's completely weak. It's not lucky that you're going to, well, you can't get a rebirth from it. So the suffering that you are mentally experiencing is very minimal, very, very tiny. But if you put all of them into place, then it becomes heavy. Right? Then it's got this potential. And this is the other thing, right? The potential to produce many different types of effects. So one of them will be your rebirth state. One of them is going to be how you behave in the present and the future. Like if you love stamping on ants, you might like to stamp on a few more, right? Then you'll do it again. So, hello, you did complete the action. You repeated the action. You actually want to stand on ants. And then you're really glad about it afterwards. So when I read this, this really shocked me and horrified me, because I remember when I was a kid and I used to love killing all the flies that come into my batch in summer, right, in New Zealand. It's so frustrating. I'd trap them all and get out the air spray and kill them all and go, bloody glad I got you all. Right? Yeah, that's what you do as a kid when you don't know. Another one I remember was snails after the rain. You know, I didn't like them. I didn't like these crawly, slimy things, right? So they come out, I'd stamp them all out and glad. You know, and just go, yeah, that's what, again, when you don't know, when you're a kid and you don't know. Right? Was your intention to hurt them, kill them? You betcha there was. Yes, I completed the action. How many often times you repeat the action? I know at least twice. Yeah. Did you rejoice? Yes, I did. Yeah, okay, there's all the causes for me to take rebirth in the hellish realm. So I killed these things. Can I do something about it to prevent it? Yes, I can. I can confess, I can regret it, I can promise not to do it again. That weakens the final result, right? So I'll just give you the examples just to show that, you know, it's quite possible we've all done foolish things without knowing. They're knowing the effect. We're just looking at the effect on them, not on us. So this is what's sort of important to get some of these ideas in your mind. Yes, it is. It's still karma, but like I said, it's quite ineffective. It's not a very potent karma because there's no intention. Like I said, karma is that mental activity. Okay, this is why it's so important. Like you see all these classes, they always start off with a motivation. Whenever the lamas come in, it's always motivation. They go, that's the karma. We have to create positive karma. So we always, you know, they often ask you to do this to reset your motivation, right? Because that's the karma. You know, when we sit down and have, you know, when you take refuge, right? One of the instructions for the new refugee is, you get your first, before you take the bite of food or the first sip of the water, offer it. Right? So you have this intention to give. Right? So you intend to give it to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and all sentient beings. That's the karma that creates your future wealth. It's an act of generosity. So we need resources to engage in a spiritual path. So now the resources, we're assured of them, because that's the effect they produce. Yeah, so once you sort of get into the nitty-gritty of this stuff and sort of slow down and sort of ask questions about it, it'll really make sense to you. And then you can say, oh, that's why I meant to do that. Yeah, oh, good. It's not just a religious belief. But like I say, the teachings of the Buddha are based on cause and effect. Many of the causes, of course, are so subtle we have no idea like what effects they're going to bring. But that's just the way it is. So we sort of take it on this beginning of like to have faith in the teachings of the Buddha. And these are them, teachings of karma, cause and effect, cause and effect. You know? What causes the suffering? What types of suffering? What are these suffering effects we get to? How do we do that? How can we stop it? Yeah? So one side shows you what you did, what contributed to suffering. The other side shows you how you can undo it all. Yeah? So the person says there's a cockroach there. You go, so what's your intention behind telling me there's a cockroach there? Well, think about it. Just think about it, Ruby. This is what I'm saying. This is what we have to think about, right? You have to think about it. The person who said, Eddie, there's a cockroach. So if you tell me, Eddie, there's a cockroach, do you want me to kill the cockroach, Ruby? Do you want me to kill the cockroach?
I don't
know. Well, if you don't, there's no intention there. So no karma there for you for killing the cockroach. Yeah, you're asking, what karma are they creating? You have to ask them, and then you have to ask them, what's your intention? From our perspective, you go, I don't know. Why are you telling me? Right? So you tell me, oh, I'm just telling you the cockroach. Oh, okay. You know? But if I decide cockroach, jump out and kill it, now I've got some karma for sure. Well, then again, you don't have the intention to walk on them or to kill them. So it's not a full karma. It's an action has been created. But you remember, again, this makes it simple. If you just remember that karma means intention. This is always the thing you need to bring to mind, first of all, was what was my intention? Then you'll know the karma. If you don't have an intention there, you've got to go, heck, okay, this is not a karmic act. This doesn't bring about these great fruitions and so forth. You go down, okay, intention not there. Was that carried out? Yes, that's done. Okay. Did you do it again? No. Was there? Okay. That one part of the action was done. And there's lots of, so in terms of the results of this, they're never fruition or result. There was other type of results that you can talk about. Now, when you, again, so this is, I'll just let you, you know, this is not easy. There's a great German scholar, Buddhist teacher for many, many years, a very good teacher. His name is Alexander Berzin. And he's got a very good website about Dharma. Now, when you go up and have a look at about the karma, you're going to run across stuff you've never heard about before in your life. Right? And you know, I try and make sense, but I can't get my head around it. However, with these new books, now I can. So there's a number of different things that happen when you complete an action. When you create a karma, one is you've created a seed. So, like, when does the seed fall? So, at the end of your action. So, for instance, that I was sitting here going, okay, I intend to become enlightened for the benefit of all seeing beings. That's my intention for being here. That action just finished. Right? That's the seed created. When it finishes, is the term for it's called a having finished. But it has finished, hasn't it? I've said this. Now I'm going to go and do something else. Right? That action is finished. It's created a seed, one thing, but it's also called a having finished. It's called. Let me see what it's called here. A having ceased. It's called having ceased, meaning having stopped, having finished. So we have that. So both a karmic seed and a having ceased remain when an action is completed. So the action, so we were here before, we said this action has got maybe four paths to create a complete seed, which could produce a rebirth effect. Right? If all those paths are in there, you don't have that seed. You have something, parts of an action that are going to create something else, but not rebirth. That seed is the action is finished. It has this potential to create some sort of effect. That potential comes out of its having ceased. So I used to wonder about this, you know, like how do these effects take place? Because, like you say, there's, you know, in teachings of karma, it's very rare for you to create an action that will cause the effect in this very life. It's very rare for that to take place. In fact, most times it doesn't. The action's not strong enough. It's not complete. All these things, all the factors aren't in place. So most times you get your experiences in other lives, and that's why I get many of the experiences of this life from we don't know where. It comes from past lives. So then the question is, well, how can something that I did so many years ago, maybe many lifetimes ago, produce this effect here? How can it do that? Well, you know, like I stopped it. I didn't do any more. I just did it. That was it. So how? So I'm thinking about this, right? And I'm thinking, well, that action, these actions are impermanent, right? They're subject to change. It's the change that produces the effect. That's how I'm sort of putting out the guy. Then these guys call it the having ceased. Because, you know, like, it doesn't just sit there as a seed, like in a seed packet, right? It's mental stuff. It's not permanent. In fact, if you look within the mind itself, you won't find any seeds or latencies or anything. You won't even find the mind. And yet these effects take place. It's called, so it says here, after an action is finished, its karmic seed is placed on the mental continuum. The having ceased of a karmic action is present with the mental consciousness. So they're giving an example. Suppose we're prostrating to the Buddha or to the altar, right? That's a physical karma, a physical action. So the potential of the physical karma of prostrating is passed on in two ways, as a latency or seed that is left by the mental factor of intention that motivated that physical action. So that's one. And as a having ceased of the perceptible form that is the physical action of prostrating. I know this is probably just do your head and this is like, oh my God, I'm over this already now, right? It takes time, believe me. And this has only just newly come out in the last couple of years in these books. Like I said, if I try to make sense of this online, I can't. If I sort of sit down a while and it, you know, these concepts are so new to us, and it does require, you know, some sort of analysis, some sort of thinking, some doubts, you know, asking, well, how can something that I did that long ago produce an effect? But the fact is they do, don't they? I mean, because if you look back at your own life, you could find out, wow, I did something when I was 10, and now that I'm 30, 40, 50, I still get the effect of it. I'm no longer doing it. I stopped, but I get the effect. Like how? You know, we've got to try and work it out. So these guys have got this way of speaking about this, like the having ceased leaves a potential for to create an effect. Because every action comes to an end, yeah, but they produce effects. Like how? You know, those guys are, yeah, well, it's got this potency. Yeah.
Do those effects ever expire?
Yes. No, well, they don't naturally expire. In fact, like I said here, we said they're increasing. The potency is increasing. But they can be the potency can be diminished. The potency can actually be stopped. So that potency is there, but it can't produce the result. And only that, but it can be removed completely. So this is another thing to remember. That's why you do all the purification practices. In fact, there's a great example of this where I often think, you know, when you invite somebody over for dinner, you do make sure your cutlery are clean, don't you? You don't serve it on last night's fishes, right? It's the same with us, right? We're trying to develop these good qualities. You don't want to load them up on a dirty mind already. You want to sort of clean the mind up a little bit, don't you? Okay, yeah, look, I'm not the best person in the world, right? Oh, I've got all these faults. What can I do? They offer the loves of it, purification practice first. And this is where you find out how mentally deranged you actually are. That's what I found about myself anyway, right? I do these purification practices and lose it completely and storm out of the building. Then I come back embarrassed. That's how it's done with me. I've done this a number of times, right? I can't bear it. You have to run and come back and settle down. Now do it again. Yes, what happens? Then you can put the good stuff in.
You've got 7 slides left.
Okay, thank you. Jesus. Okay, so the karmic seed, this is the link between our past actions and our future experiences. So how is it stored in the mind? Well, you have to create, like I said, a sufficiently strong and weighty intentional action. That's your karma. It's got, like I said before, it's going to be it's strength. It's got to meet the four criteria. Many times they won't, especially when you're trying to do something good. You're nearly always there when you do something stupid. And nearly always complete our foolish bad actions and rarely complete the good. So these are, like I said, the karmic seeds are latencies stored in our continuous mind stream. Now, this continuous mind stream is not the conceptual mind that you're thinking with all the time. That's not what we're talking about here. It's not even the mind that you dream with, although it can affect dreams too. It's a very subtle mind that they're stored in. Well, there's different presentations, but it's not the normal mind that you're thinking with. That's not where they're stored. They're not stored on your visual consciousness either. But this is the stuff that goes from life to life to life. While we have suffered in different lives and happiness and so forth. Like I said, they're like files saved to the cloud. If you work with a computer and you want to save your material, you rip it up from the cloud, right? And just waits there. And then when you require it, you grab it. Yeah? So for us, when we find ourselves in the right situations, it's grabbed. It just comes down. Now we experience the file, we experience the result. So our current actions create our future experiences, while our present circumstances result from past actions.
This analogy that you presented, because just like files to a cloud, you can never really point to the cloud and go, there's the file.
Yeah,
When I'm
that's
like, we
right.
kind of pull it up and we never think about where did it come from, but there's nothing concrete. You can go, there it
Oh,
is,
there it
there's
is.
my
Yeah, that's
file.
right. There's the cloud and there's the
Yeah.
file. No. And that's just like the mind, too, though. You go looking for it, you can't find it. You can't find any of these things. They're not findable. Yet we still have experiences. That's strange. Okay, now here's some little last little bits. So harming the positive seeds, right? So we've all done good stuff. One of the major reasons we know that, we're here. You would never, while we're here as human beings, the virtuous seed of karma ripened. That's why we're here. That's the effect, the cause of that virtuous seed. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here as human beings. So we've already got the virtue. We don't need to worry about that. The troubles. Are we losing it or increasing it? So it's possible to lose it. Yeah. What kills our virtue and our positive seeds? First, anger. Anger just wipes out any good that anyone has done to us. We cannot recall it. Right? So, no access to their good qualities. Get angry enough with the person, you'll never even see them as a good person ever. So anger's a killer. And the last one is what they said, wrong views. So wrong ideas about things, especially the wrong idea like about karma. Then you get in trouble. So there's plenty of people that have no conception of karma, and you can see what they're doing all around the world, right? Trying to be happy by doing really heavy negative things. Thinking they're going to get some other outcome. Well, you can't. So these are the major things that kill your virtue. Anger, and especially if you're trying to cover this bodhisattva vehicle, you know, become bodhisattva, just a bodhisattva looks upon everybody with kindness. So kindness and anger, They're opposite to one another, right? So the anger destroys this way of looking at people through a kind lens. Okay, that's again like with the wrong views. One of the wrongest views we have is we equate the people with their behavior. We think because you behave like that, that's who you are. And none of us are that. Right? That's a common mistake. Now, harming the negative seeds, right? This is really important for us. A number of different things. The four opponent powers. This would also, the four opponent powers are within the Vajrasattva practice. They're also within the 35 Buddha practice. These are practices that are mainly purification centered. And Geshe Zopa, as you know, is coming here next week. We're getting a whole lot of teaching on this. If you can come, come. It'll be much more detail to show you how you can do the purification practices. So, of course, this one here, the wisdom, realizing, emptiness, uproots those causes right, out the window they go. The other ones is like sort of burning them. They can't bring about their result. They're there, but they can't affect you. Again, a quote from the Buddha here. Possessed of my own deeds, I am the inheritor of deeds, kin to deeds. One who has deeds as a refuge. Whatever deeds I shall do, whether good or evil, I shall become the heir of it. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? There's a great story in one of the texts. It's in the Pali Canon, though, where the Buddha teaches his son, right? The cause and effect. And he asked the son to start looking in the mirror. He says, examine your actions before, during, and after. So like many of us, we might have a good intention to do something, but then how you carry it out is not very good. I've had experience with this myself quite recently. And you get the result, believe me. You might think you're doing something good, good reason. Then the way you do it impacts you badly. You know, okay, something's not right here, that's for sure. So you might find that yourself. It's just like, we're bright enough to be here, but, you make mistakes. Reconciling this with this idea of never lost, right? They say, karma is never lost, right? Unless you apply a counterforce, then it can't affect you. Don't go into this fatalistic mode that, because I've got these bad karmas on mental stream, I must suffer. That's not true. You can do something about it. If you don't do anything about it, of course you're going to suffer. Right conditions come along, well, the way you go, it's just cause and effect. But if you just take this idea of past and future lives, and look at your own behaviors in this life and go, okay, it's quite possible I've never always been a human. Therefore, at some stage, I might have been an animal. Do animals like to kill? Yeah, of course they do. You see them liking to kill in this very life, don't you? Watch the nature documentary. You can see animals playing with others while they're killing them. So could that have been me? So, don't know, but perhaps it was. So I look at it going, I've probably done everything. If you look at beginningless lifetimes, I could have done every nasty, bad deed ever invented. But I must have done something virtuous, because here I am. I can't be all bad. Here I am as a human being, looking over the whole thing and going, oh my gosh, can I do something about it? Because I certainly don't want to end up as one of those animals next time. And then God says, yeah, you can do something about it. We ask, what? And so, like I said, so I remember in this lifetime stamping on all those snails, killing all those flies. Huh? Perfect, complete actions to lead me into a terrible rebirth. So I go, I don't want a terrible rebirth. Yeah, good, Ed, smart move. Here's the practice. Do this and you're safe. Of course, many times when you engage in these practices, it's very, very hard for us to be sitting here and going, yeah, I'm really sure I'll get that result. I'll be right. But we don't know. But you can, like I said, just start looking in your own mind right now for any cause of suffering. I bet you can't find it. That doesn't truly exist. So Yeah, I think it was possible. If it weren't possible, it's only because it's possible the Buddha taught, right? And saying, you see, the Buddha taught out of his great compassion. He said, yes, I see all sentient beings suffering. I also see they can be free, just like me. But that's why I'm going to teach you the method. And so he did. Okay, I know I'm right over time. Is there anything you'd like to ask? Anything without it being complex? No, Ruby, sorry. No, what, you have to say something? You got an idea? No, karma is not a revenge. It's just a cause and effect. It's just cause and effect. So we have this big thing called cause and effect, right? That covers anything that's produced. It's got parts. Karma is talking about mental cause and effect. It can't be the exactly same thing, but they could be like, for instance, you might have been born as a whale 20 lifetimes ago, and you might have been born as one 5 lifetimes ago, and maybe if you don't behave well, you could be born one next time. So you're always a whale, but it's slightly different. In fact, one of the stories of the Buddha said this planet took rebirth 500 times as a dog. Right, so, okay, that's got to be a heavy karma. And we don't want that. This is our last meditation, folks. I've ran you over time, so we're back this quick. Again, just get comfortable. Settle the body. So while you're sitting here trying to be calm and breathe naturally, you might be able to notice the flow of thoughts, words and actions that comprise your experience. Now, every intentional action plants a seed in your mind stream, which creates potential for future experiences. So these seeds await the right conditions to manifest as happiness or suffering in your life. So like files stored in the cloud until accessed, karmic seeds exist as potentials until conditions trigger their manifestation. What do you think determines the strength of the seed? Well, first there is your intention. Then there's whether you completed the action, whether you've repeated it, and what your attitude was to the action. These shape the imprint. Now you plant seeds daily. Use mindfulness or recollection of which seeds you wish to plant. What files do you want to create and store in the cloud? And as you move through life, just try to be aware as much as possible of the actions you're choosing to create. Why am I doing this? What's my intention? Will this intention lead to greater happiness or greater suffering for myself? Choose wisely. And breathe in through your nostrils and exhale. So again, just briefly going through that. So we know there are four karmic principles. This is the main thing to remember. You can use this. The seed stuff's a little bit more difficult, gnarly. You'll come to that in time if you have more interest in it. You know, like this major thing, the certainty of karma, the karma is definite. What's definite about karma? Somebody tell me. Yes, it does increase. But what's definitive about karma? What's certain? I haven't got the answer yet. Yep. Good produces good. Bad produces bad. That's what's definite. That's what's definite about karma. And the other things you've mentioned are also quite true. But this is the thing to remember. Right? Good produces good. Bad produces bad. It does increase. And you can't get an effect if you haven't put in place the cause. And these causes don't just vanish, right? They don't just disappear. you've got to get rid of them. If it's bad stuff, you've got to get rid of it. Just leaving it alone, you're just waiting for the conditions to ripen and you're gone. Okay, good. And you have this analogy of the seed and the medicinal tree. They're trying to draw upon that. These slides get put up. If you forget, just start off going, oh, hang on, what was the first one? Oh, yeah, cherries or cherries. Now, it's like good for good, right? Chilies for chilies. You plant the seed of a chili, you get a chili tree. If I do something bad, I'm going to get something bad. That's it. But that's it. Then I put them in, and what happens? It increases, doesn't it? Gets bigger and so forth. You just go through it. Like I said, look at a plant in your garden and just relate it to it, and you go, ah, okay, just like me. But try and make it simple for yourself. And that's why we often use these analogies. Because if you're just trying to, like, Ruby, just quickly open up the book, because you haven't hooked it to something. But, so this one is you hook it to the plant. Right? A plant requires a seed. The seed always gives me that plant. See, the seed, the plant is bigger because it increased in size. So for next week, there is material up there. If you have the necessary books and so forth, have a look at, and online too, it's up there online. Just go to the site. You can have a look at these things, the materials there to read or to print out. And next week, we're going to have a look at some of the ingredients. karma isn't created, not all actions are equal. So we're going to have a look at that, what makes an action fully count, why intention is so vital. And these things that really make some actions more powerful and stronger than others. So I know I'm taking you over time, folks. Let's dedicate this material. So we've created some virtuous karma. We want to direct into the goal we set at the beginning, which was enlightenment for ourselves, so we can bring all beings to enlightenment. So please join me in saying, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. Now, the best motivation you can bring to any action is bodhicitta, mind of enlightenment. Let us say this. May the supreme doer, bodhicitta, not yet born, rise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. And for His Holiness, who just had his birthday a couple of days ago, the wish granting, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world. To the incomparably kind, Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech. May all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And finally, the prayer for finding the Rinpoche's rebirth. In holding and spreading the moving's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you, a matchless request. Okay, so class finished. Thank you once again. I'm glad you're all here and I can speak to you about something I care a great deal about and love. So thank you for joining and talking. And thank you, those online. Megan Ashley.